Hi, welcome to This Is Your Book Club podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Jamie.
Welcome back. It's Fifth Monday.
I love it. Something new.
I know. We like to twist it a little bit on the fifth, give you something, a surprise.
Yes.
And today is no different. We have a special treat today with an author interview.
Yes. This has turned into, like, I never, when we started the podcast, never really thought about interviewing authors.
Right.
And it is a fave.
I love it.
I've learned so much.
Me too.
Like all the little picky questions that I want to know about writing.
I know.
We're figuring it out.
And how unique everyone's writing experience is.
Right. It's so different from author to author and book type to book, genre to genre even, it sounds like.
So, yeah. I love it. And how many possibilities there are within the publishing world for you to write a book. It's just all over the map.
It's always almost been like a fantasy to me.
Yes.
An author and how they write their books. And like, right? It's otherworldly. Like it's something I've known nothing about. Wouldn't even know where to start if I wanted to write.
Right.
Which, no, I don't. But it's becoming more, I see the reality of it more. It's not so mysterious.
Yes.
And so fascinating.
Oh, it's so
I'm
fascinating.
I'm loving it.
I know. I love it. All the authors you've spoken to and the insight that they have given has been awesome.
Yeah, I agree.
And today is no different.
No different.
I love today's interview. Excited for you to hear.
Yeah, so today we are interviewing Melissa Torres. She is the author of a series of books, and then she has a couple picture books. So I'll read her bio and then we'll
Bring her in.
Yeah. So, Melissa writes about her passions, gymnastics, and explaining divorce to kids. Melissa was a competitive gymnast for 14 years and an NCAA Division I gymnast at Utah State University. She draws from her experience as a gymnast to create authentic stories in the Perfect Balance gymnastics series. Melissa is a single mother to two boys. She continually tries to create a healthy, secure life for her boys in a non-traditional home. She draws on her experience as a mother to create the Mom and Dad Love Me books. Melissa has a BA from Utah State University, where she studied psychology and literature. When Melissa is not writing or parenting, she enjoys reading, weightlifting, and partner dancing.
So fun.
Yeah. So let's introduce you to Melissa. Melissa, welcome to our podcast.
Hey.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
So good to have you. We love talking to authors.
Yes. And you've written more than one. You've written a lot of books. You've got a series and two picture books, two children's books.
A series, two picture books, and two workbooks that go with the series.
Okay. So tell us about.
Which one did you write first?
Yeah.
Okay, so I wrote the gymnastics series first. So it's a chapter book, which is for ages 7 to about 11, a chapter book series with the main characters are little gymnasts. And that's where I started because that's where I felt that there were missing books. And I had a lot of gymnasts ask me, or rather their parents say, do you know about any books about gymnastics? And we just couldn't find any. And so I decided to write them.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And if you've got, I mean, you speak from experience as a gymnast yourself.
Yes.
When you've got a child who's invested in something so much like gymnastics, mm-hmm. and maybe reading is not their number one thing, you want to find something that piques their interest. And so if you can't find that, then you're missing a whole
world
a way to start reading is what I'm assuming, a love of reading.
You're basically describing my childhood. I was obsessed with the sport. We couldn't find any, but my mom was an English teacher and she couldn't find any books that I would connect with. And I didn't really discover a love for reading until high school. And that to me is very tragic because I love books now. So I made sure my boys found books that they could connect with. And I remember one day just bebopping around in the library and I was like, I wonder if there's any fun new gymnastics books. And 25 years later, there still weren't. And I was like, gosh, here's another generation of little gymnasts that maybe aren't reading. So notice with kids, if you connect them with what they can relate to and they get connected to reading, they'll move on and read another book that's maybe not exactly like them.
Absolutely.
Now starting them is hard.
You've got to get them hooked somewhere. And mm-hmm. As a teacher, that's exactly like if you've got a kid who's struggling to want to read,
right?
then you've got a problem with getting them to learn to read and progress. And so you've got to find that hook that really grabs them and brings them in. And so I'm so glad you did it. Like, you saw the opening and grabbed it and went with it.
So how old were you when you wrote the first book?
39 or 40.
Okay. Yeah.
Age crisis turning point.
Okay. I was going to say, like, that's like middle of kids and family life usually. And you probably had, I don't know, I can't assume, but you have a job or you're doing something, right? I assume whether it's your job is taking care of your kids.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you know what? I'm going to write this book.
Had you always wanted to be a writer, or were you surprised to find yourself then thinking, I'm going to write a book?
So I hadn't always been a writer because I wasn't a reader. I feel like writing comes from avid readers. However, in middle school, we had a writing fair, kind of like a science fair, and they made all the kids write a story. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of like winged it and wrote a story, and I got some kind of prize. I don't know, honorable mention in sixth grade. And I was like, really? I didn't put that much into it. Not really. My heart wasn't in it. And then they did it again in seventh grade. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try a little harder. And I got honorable mention again in seventh grade. And then it just kind of went to the wayside. I think when you say, I want to be a writer, there's a bit in our culture of like, that's really hard. Maybe you should pick something else. And so it just sort of, that moment or that seed that was planted just never got watered. And so I went into human resources. My first half of my life and my career was human resources. And I think what led me to the writing was a change, change in life was like, you know what? I want to be home with my kids. I want this flexible lifestyle. So it was two pronged. One, I saw the missing hole for the gymnastics books. And two, I started reading chapter books out loud to my kids. And I was like, I think I could do this. They're not a real complicated format. And then three, the lifestyle was very appealing, that I could be more working around my kids' schedule. So that was the three pieces that led to that mid-career, if you will.
Yeah. That's amazing.
So did you quit your job and was like, I'm doing this? Like,
jumped all in.
I did human resources until baby number two came along, and that's when I quit, and then turned around and got divorced and went, oh crap, I don't have a job and I've got two kids. So that's when I started really frantically saying, I need to do this and I need to do it fast. And if it doesn't work, then I'll go back to HR. Yeah. So it's just a faith example.
So then how long did it take you? I mean, I love this question because I think it's fascinating when you talk about the amount of time that people put into writing their book.
So the 20,000 word books, the chapter books, the first few were a lot quicker. I mean, they're, a fourth of the size of an adult novel, right? Adult novel is about 80,000 words. So though I was able to write the first one probably in a few months, just a couple of months, but I was very motivated. Like, I got to figure out if this works, and it doesn't, I'll go back. I mean, I was kind of manic. Like, I need to see if this works. And so that was in the beginning of, or the end of 2015 and the beginning of 2016, I decided that I needed to, the traditional publishers weren't fast enough. And so I wasn't very patient for waiting for their rejection letters. And so I just started going down the path of self-publishing because I was impatient and I felt like I knew the gymnastics community and I knew where gymnasts were. And I felt like I could market to that niche. So I just went for it. Plus the Olympics was coming around in 2016. I'm like, let's get this book out before the Olympics.
Yeah, absolutely. That was great.
Yeah, great timing on your part. And so you decided to self-publish for that reason. You just needed
for
it
speed.
For mm-hmm. speed.
So, and I've since randomly sent out letters to traditional and they're just not interested, or I'm not blanketing it enough. I've maybe only sent out 10. And from what I hear, it needs to be a lot more. And but my motivation isn't there because it's going well with the self-publishing. So occasionally I'll send a letter and then I just continue on my merry way with the path that I want.
So the self-publishing route, you hire your own editor.
Yes.
So you found your own editor and your cover art. Those are two other things we're always really interested in.
So I hire two independent freelance editors. And then I also, my mom reads them as well, as a former K-6 English teacher. So she is great with the old school grammar. And then I have one editor that's very good with the concept of the whole story and another one that's also good with line editing. So between the three of them, I feel like they hit everything. And then the artists I found on Upwork.com. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty easy website to find artists because you're looking at their art. Is easier to look at their portfolio and go, okay, that's the style I want. Editing, I went with people that I knew because that's harder to quantify and see what their work is like.
Right.
So. Yeah, that's a good point.
With your artists, have you used the same artist for
all? I wish I could say I loved my first artist. No, I have not, but I've been able to keep the style continuous. So they usually do about three books, and artists are very motivated by inspiration on the project. And I think sometimes after three books, they're ready to move on. Yeah. It's exciting and challenging at first. And then once they get the hang of it, they're like, it's time for another project.
They need that challenge to motivate. Yeah.
Yes. But thankfully they usually stick with me for about three books because at the top of each chapter, I put in a gymnastic skill with the name of the skill. And so there's a pretty steep learning curve for them to draw that. And probably I drive them crazy, which is why they're done after three, because I'm very picky about the skill.
Well, you
want
know
it to look right.
And
right?
I'm highly doubtful that your artists have background in gymnastics.
None of them.
That would be quite a
point. Like, you can't have her chin on her chest. She'll land on her head. You need to fix it.
She'll land on her head. What makes you think that's going to work?
Right. That's awesome.
And so the back and forth with the artist, how long does that take before you have,
that takes a while. I start that when I'm not done with the book yet. So So the first four chapter books, and then I had the girls age in the series. And so as they aged, I increased the reading level of the books. So the book that I just finished is almost 70,000 words. So it's technically a middle grade book.
Okay.
Based on its size and vocabulary. And honestly, my writing has improved. So I'm growing with my readers.
I love that because your readers are growing and becoming better readers.
Yes. And
so a lot of times, like when you look at like Junie B. Jones or those beginning chapter books, there's 20 something of them and
they outgrow them. Like
they read the first 10, eight, and their level increases. And so I love that you've increased the level along with your readers. Awesome.
Right. It's hard though. Like I've had to grow with them. I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to do a little bigger vocabulary and more complex sentences and add in a third storyline instead of just two storylines. So that has increased. But to answer your question, I digress, about the artists, the bigger books, I started working with the artist last May. I started writing the book last March, hired the artist in May, and I was concurrently working with him and writing the book at the same time. And then we both finished up in about July.
Wow.
And then, with self-publishing, it's very quick. My editors had it in July and August, and then I read it again one more time in September, and then it went live in October.
Wow.
October 15th. Yeah. Something like that.
Okay. So that's quick.
That is quick.
Yeah.
I mean, we're with the other authors we've interviewed. I mean, we're hearing years, right? Like
year
to write a book and then usually a year with the publisher. I mean, it just takes time. That is fascinating that you can get it done so much quicker when you do it on your own.
It's almost scary. You can just like upload and you hit live and then it's live, ready to go on Amazon.
Like that. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
That is really cool.
So it's nerve-wracking because Amazon likes the pre-order. So actually now that I remember the date, it was a November 1st pre-order. And I remember scrambling like early October, like this isn't, I need to read it one more time. It's really just when you're done with it, you can just upload it.
Wow, that is super amazing.
When you said you need to read it one more time, so you've read these books.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you're writing them, you're reading over your stuff over and over again. Yes. I know when I've read books and I find an error and I think, oh my gosh,
how is this missed?
How is this missed? Because sometimes they're bigger errors than others. Other times they're minor.
Like yeah.
But I always wonder, what is the process here that sometimes there's a miss? So have you experienced that? Has there been
usually a miss? Yes, absolutely. Usually when there's a miss, because I mean, there's four of us reading it,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
How did you miss this? Well, how it gets missed is usually an editor will say, this paragraph is kind of awkward. And so I'll fix that paragraph. Well, now that paragraph hasn't been looked at by anybody.
Okay.
And so usually the errors that happen at the very end are when you think you're going back and you're fixing something anytime you touch the manuscript, you're gonna mess up something else.
Right.
That makes perfect sense.
So yeah. When you're sending your copy to your editors to read it, like, are they getting a digital version or are you printing it out and giving them a stack of papers?
It depends on who the editor is. My 76-year-old mother likes the printed version. So I go and print it and spiral bind it and give her printed version. My other two authors do go digital.
Okay.
And actually they tend to print it out themselves and like to write
on it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's track changes on the computer. I just really like a red pen. And I think most editors do too. They really like a red pen. They like to write on it. You write notes in the margins, you know, all of that. It's, to me, it's irreplaceable. And I think for them as well. Yeah. So they
love it.
Actually, no, I think about it. One prints it out herself. The other one likes a printout. So I'll print it out for them. Yeah.
For them. Is there a special program, writing program that you use? Or is this, I've never thought of this before.
No.
That formats it for you or you're doing Word or?
I am doing, so there are formatting programs. And the only reason I know that is from being on Facebook pages for other writers.
Okay.
But I am the old school little nerd that just uses Word and I format it myself on Word.
On Word.
Yeah. So there's a template on Amazon. Amazon is just amazing. So there's a whole backside for authors. If you say, okay, I'm going to do a book. And then they say, okay, good for you. Here's the template. And the template is Word 97, if you can imagine. And so you just pick what size book you're doing, and mine are 5x8x8x8. And they just give you a template for the 5x8x8x8 and you format it. And that was a very steep learning curve.
I was going to say, how did you know that that's what size you
Seriously.
Were going for?
So I went to the library and just looked at all the chapter books and went, what size are most of these?
You went with your ruler and you're like,
spacing on the page, you know what I mean? Because even like the different levels of books have different spacings between the lines.
Yes.
Or how do you know what font is the right font that's easy to read?
So I actually picked a font for the first three or four books. The A in when we type an A, it's that really fancy one that's like the hook and then the little bubble. Mm-hmm. That's not how we're teaching kids to write an A. And my first son was like, had a hard time with that A. So I picked the only font that showed an A, how we teach kids to write an A.
Okay.
And that's the font I picked for the first four books. And then I also just took chapter books from the library and lined them up and was like, what is the size and what is the spacing? And then I've done that as they've aged, I've just looked at the size and spacing of books of the library and figured out what the industry standard was.
That's so
amazing that you're just like figuring this out, totally grassroots.
Yeah.
Publishing here. Like
determination, sheer grit over here.
And as a kindergarten teacher, that printed A messes every kid up. And it is so frustrating. Like, no, this is how we make an A, but you might sometimes see it like this. And the Q. I tell you, it's so confusing for these learners that are just trying to figure out that this means something. And now there's, you know, I could go.
Yeah.
I just noticed that. I was like, what font has a regular A? Like, let's go with that one.
I know. I would not have even thought of that.
Yeah.
But it is like I know that our listeners can't see this, but we have your book sitting here for us to look at.
So we were just looking
through it. So I was like, oh my goodness, look at that. Like, it really is so clean and clear. Like, it's easy to read. And even in the older ones, we can compare. And this is more like a traditional font that you might find in an adult's book.
Right. So it really jumps. Book 5, it's the younger kid font, but they're closer together. And then book 6 jumps to a regular person font. And then that's kind of where the break was for the girls aging. And it's a more complicated storyline. And the the book, parents pick it up and open it and they know what their kid can read. So
sure, it's, yeah.
Our parents just pick up a book, they open it and go, oh yeah, that's too hard for my kid, or this will work for my child.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true. That is so great. True.
So I know that you, knowing the gymnastics community, you've also during gymnastics seasons gone around to different competitions and have sold books there as well. So yes. You're on Amazon.
Yes.
And you've been found at different gymnastics competitions.
Yeah. So I go to big meets. The gymnastics community competes in January and February and March. Most of the girls compete in the winter. So in the winter, I'll go to meets that have at least 1,000 kids. So I can get to as many as I can. And they're so excited to see a fiction gymnastics novel. I mean, you look at most of the gymnastics books out there are biographies, and those are great and the girls love them, but they're about this elite Olympic journey, which is such a small percentage of girls that will make that.
Yeah.
I mean, a tenth of percentage. There's 3 every 4 years that get to go. I mean, so they're very excited to read something that's more relatable, that is about level 3 or level 4.
Yeah, like them, where they are. Absolutely.
And some of the same issues that they're dealing with.
Well, I felt very strongly about writing about strong girls. And that the conflict is girl versus sport, not girl versus girl. They're there, they have their own goals, they're working towards their own thing, and they don't have to compete against each other. And for me, the sport was a very positive experience, and I have good relationships with girls because of it. And I never understood the static going on at school. I just kind of stayed in my own world where it wasn't. And I want to promote that. I think when you read, well, one of my readers of the month, she said it perfectly. She goes, I like the books because they teach me how to handle myself.
Instead of.
Right. That was like from an 8-year-old. I'm like, yeah. Wow, that's perfect.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That is.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, I go to gymnastics meets. I love seeing the girls. I love signing the books for them and asking them how their meet went. And a lot of parents have a lot of questions for me about the sport. It's a very, complicated sport to navigate, and a lot of times the parents haven't done it, and so I'm there all day. I answer questions for the parents, and it's just fun. Yeah,
that's really cool.
I love that you get to go do, because I grew up dancing. I love to go to dance concerts and watch dance concerts, but I don't really have a reason to go. My daughter's not a dancer, you know, so that you've made it into something that you can still go back and have that connection in the community. And that you've brought something to the community. I love it.
Well, and it's funny because I left the community for years. And so when I was in human resources, and then I went, the first year I went back to meets, I ran into old coaches, old judges. I had a judge who was like, oh, hi. I'm like, are you kidding me? How do you remember me after 20 years? I mean, it's a very tight knit community, and it was just bizarre. And I was like, why did I leave this? Why did I walk away from this? And I'm so happy to be back and to see old friends that are still judging and coaching and running the meets and involved in some way.
Very cool. Yeah. I know when my kids are involved in something and they do a performance or they do, you know, whatever they're doing, we go to a game, whatever, I like to like a memento of it, you know, and sometimes those mementos are not what I'd be like, this is what they're selling here.
Right. There was a table in the garbage books, as soon as we go home, right?
Hands down.
That's well, Jamie, if there was a table of books anywhere, you would be lying to it. It would be a dance competition.
That is so true.
That is very true.
But I can tell the moms that are readers, they're like, oh, books. I mean, they just change their trajectory of their walking. Some walk right by and like, oh, it's just books. And some moms are like, oh, what do you have over here? I see books.
And you're right. That's exactly what would pull me. But there's often vendors and it's junk and food and they've just done something athletic and you're like, now we're going to have nachos with fake cheese.
Right.
No, thank you. That is.
Although when I'm trucking those books into the meet and they're heavy and I'm carrying them in, I'm like, I should be selling socks. Like,
that's awesome.
That's a good point.
Oh.
A little heavy.
Something a little, there is nothing heavier than a box.
Right. Correct. That,
every time we've moved, it's been like, wait, why do I put all the books in one box? So
that's so funny.
Yeah.
So what made you, because you've also written children books, right? Yes. Like picture books. So how did you make that transition? You're like, you know what? Now I think I'm going to write a picture book.
So similar problem. I went to the library to look for a book and it wasn't there. So same exact scenario. So I had moved out and I was living with my two children and I was like, I gotta explain divorce to them. Like they were little, they were 2 and 6. So I go to the library and I go to the children's section. I'm like, where's your books on divorce? And the librarian's like, we go out this section and around the corner. I'm like, no, not for me, for my children. And she was like, we don't have anything like that.
Wow, that is crazy. Is that crazy?
So now there are. I mean, this was eight, nine years ago. But I was I've always gone to books for answers ever since I was a young adult. Anytime I didn't know what to do, I went to the library and got every book I could find on it and that answered my question. So I wanted a book to explain this to my kids and start that conversation. I'm like, you mean to tell me there's 200 books on potty training and 2000 books on puberty and there's not one book in here on divorce? Like, are we all just not talking about it and hoping, or just moving out and hoping our kids don't notice? What the heck's going on? So that book is very, well, there was one book, but I found it a little bit harsh and scary. And it wasn't one that I wanted to read to them. And so the one I created is very sweet. It's, it talks about my parents are getting divorced and I was worried about it. And this is what I learned. I learned some things are the same and some things are different. And I'll tell you what they are, so you don't have to be worried. That's the first page or first two pages. And so then it says, my parents go to my soccer game. That's the same, but my brother sits between them. That's different. And then it goes through, we still celebrate Christmas. That's the same, but I do 2 Christmases, one at mom's, one at dad's. That's different. And so I think my background is literature and psychology. And I feel like kids just want to know, how is this going to impact me? What's going to be the same? What's going to be different? Do my parents still love me? Like, those are their questions. And I feel like sometimes we get a little too adult when we're explaining, divorce. So that's why I wanted simple, sweet. This is what you have to worry about.
That's perfect.
I love that.
I know in this last year with the pandemic, there are so many things that were different. Yes. And I can't remember what holiday it was, but my daughter said to me after, the first couple holidays of things different, the next holiday came up and she said, okay, will you just tell me what's going to be different about this holiday from last holidays? Just, I'm okay with all of it. I just need to know beforehand. Right. And we just went through all the traditions we normally do and what was going to be different about it. What you just did was like genius.
Yeah.
I didn't even think to do with my own daughter the last year of things that are going to be different in our life. So,
well, and just, yeah, that's all they want to know. I mean, kids don't have any control. They just have to go along with what we're doing. And so that's understandable that they just want to know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Some of that book will be very applicable and some of it won't be the case for some families, but at least it'll open the discussion.
Yes. Right. In a nice, safe, let's sit and read a book. And I agree with you. I go to books for everything. Whenever my kids are having an issue with something, whether they know that's what I've done or not, I'll be like, hey, let's read this book. Can you relate to anything in here? It is such a good conversation starter because they might not want to tell me about what they're going through or what they're feeling, but we can talk about it through a different character from a book and I can get information out of there that they don't typically want to have a heart to heart with mom about.
So have they done it back to you, Jeannie?
Not yet.
No, my oldest did it that to me.
Did he? No way.
It was his first young adult novel. He's all, can you read this book? I'm like, uh-oh, what's in this young adult novel that he wants me to talk about? And it was this Star Wars novel and the characters are dating. And so I'm like, it's not really my bag. I love women's literature, read this Star Wars book. I've made him read so many books. And I read the whole thing. And there was a certain scene that I thought maybe you wanted to talk about. I'm like, so I read the whole book. Was there something you want to talk about? He was like, no, I just liked it. I wanted you to read it.
I'm so glad I read that.
Thank you.
You're like, oh, I thought there was a hidden message in here.
I was searching the whole time.
What is he trying to tell me?
Yeah.
That's awesome that you stuck to it to the end, because yes, my kids have said, oh yeah, you should read this. This would be good. And my daughter's really into dragons, and I'm like, not my jam. I can't read 100 books with dragon characters.
Oh, there's the Wings of Fire.
Oh yeah. Very much so, Wings of Fire, and I have not read one yet. Although she'd love to discuss, she'll read me pages like, listen to this, Mom. And I'm like,
That's awesome. Funny. If it's not your genre, it's so hard.
Yes.
Like we love, we're loyal to our genres.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is very true.
So did you, I mean, self-published again.
With the picture books.
And you found an artist?
Yes. So the artist that's on the first three books of the series did the two picture books. He is insanely talented. And I am not surprised it was time for him to move on, because I got very lucky out of the gate with him. And so his it's really cute. His artwork is amazing.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. So how do you figure out, like, I mean, now I'm getting into like the nitty gritty here, but it's like, on this page, I want a picture of this, and here's the words that are going to go here. Like, how you would have to really work together, I assume.
Yeah. And I think
you lay out.
I had the bravery to do the picture books with him, because we'd already done the three chapter books. And worked really well together. And then I was like, hey, what do you think of this project? And he was like, let's do it. So yes. And to answer your question, my understanding with traditional is you send in the words, they pick the artist, and it just gets done. The lovely thing about self-publishing is he and I worked together on all of the pictures. And I said, this is what I imagine for this page. What do you think? And he would sketch something up and send it back to me. So we had a lot of fun with it. It was cool. Really fun. Yeah.
That is super awesome. Cool.
I think that's a whole nother level of using an artist for a book when it's a picture book than, you know, the images you need for a chapter book.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think talking so closely for me, of course I'm biased, but I feel like exactly what I wanted to say came to life. And I can't imagine doing one without having access to the artist and really telling them your vision. Because I have in my head what I'm thinking, and it's hard to because it's two stories, really. You're telling stories with looking and then a little bit of the words, but
yeah.
I'm only writing half the book and he's writing the other half. And so, but I had it in my head. So yeah, it was awesome.
When you wrote those books, because the need was found through your own children, do the characters in those picture books reflect your children?
They do. Yes. And the names are their real names.
They are.
Okay. Oh, awesome.
I've seen them online and kind of looked at them, but I haven't seen them in real life. So, like I have your other ones. So.
The mom looks like me, which is funny to see someone make a caricature of you. I'm like, does my nose really look like that? I guess it does. Like, and he just reverse engineered their dad based on what they looked like. He kind of backed it out and just created. And I did talk to my ex before I published it. I said, this is what I wrote. You look at it. Are you okay with this? What do you think? And he was very supportive.
Awesome.
Yeah. It is really cool.
That's amazing. Because I think that's another step of divorce
that
is difficult to co-parent, especially when you're making something so personal with your career like that. And getting the respect back and forth for what you do. And
yeah, I think it's been a while, but I think maybe he was nervous until he saw the storyline. I mean, you're like, well, I guess, what are you going to write?
Right? That's so, really cool.
But yeah, I showed him the script of the film and he was like, okay, that's fine. Yeah.
That's right. And so there's two of those and they both deal with the topic of divorce. Two books. Yes.
So the first one is the what's going to be the same, what's going to be the different. And the second one is he's worried. It's his first Christmas at dad's house and he's worried that Santa won't find him.
Awesome.
And at his new home.
What a realistic thought.
I was just going to say. Yes.
Right? That's so confusing.
That is confusing. And that's things I've never, you don't fear. Really think about it until you're in that situation.
Your kids ask you.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah.
Right.
What's going to happen here?
Right. Like
I mean, we have those kinds of conversations, like when we stay too late at grandma's house on Christmas Eve, like, we're not going to get home in time. I'm worried about this.
Fly right by our house. Let's get going.
Right. So I'm like, that's just their number one concern at Christmas all the time is don't forget me. Right. No one wants to be forgotten.
Yeah. I grew up spending Christmas Eve and Christmas Day at my grandma's house. Like my whole family, we slept over at grandma's house. Santa came to grandma's house. So that was something we had to write a letter to make sure Santa knew every year that we weren't going to be at home. We were going to be at grandma's house.
That's very forward thinking to write a letter.
So this is important.
You've always been a prayer.
Well, I don't know that my parents, I don't remember exactly who initiated it. I just remember we needed to make sure he knew. So we'll be there.
It's important. Logistics.
Yeah.
A lot of packages will deliver.
Christmas is important.
We're mixing things up on him.
Yeah.
Right.
Very cool. Oh, well, I love it. What else?
I really want to talk about, you said you like women's lit. I'm shifting gears a little bit here.
Absolutely.
But I want to know, like, who's your favorite author? Like, what do you love to read?
There's the list is long. My favorite author, so I do love historical fiction, and my favorite author is Philippa Gregory. And
I love her.
Amazing.
Wait, who?
You've never read Philippa Gregory. I don't know how to say her name. I'm sure I'm
Philippa, I don't know. But she, her most famous book, Jamie,
the Boleyn Girl.
Did you see it? They made it into a movie.
Jamie.
How do I not know
this? This is my favorite thing.
So what I love about her, I do love historical fiction because I think history is fascinating, but it really comes to life for me when there's a person in the middle of it, a character in the middle of it.
I agree with 100%.
She puts a women's spin on it, where her main characters are usually famous women in history. And there's not a lot of information on famous women in history. You know, we didn't document it. And so she has a whole series on all of Henry VIII's wives, a book for each wife. Yes. And there's very little on
that. Oh, good.
I haven't even heard.
It's been a long time since I've read hers, but I was addicted for a really long time.
Oh, and my God. She just does a great job of creating this story. And I've learned so much history reading her books. And I love how she speculates on these famous women, what their lives must have been like.
I cannot wait.
She's amazing. The other one that I like, I was prepared for you guys. I wrote a list. Women's lit / historical fiction favorite. And then I do like contemporary women's lit. And my favorite author in that area is Lauren Weisberger. She wrote Devil Wears Prada. Every book I've read of hers, I love. I've read at least six.
So I just recently read The Devil Wears Prada. This last year. And everyone was like, wait, you haven't read that yet? Yeah. I've read it
and
now.
She did Singles Game, which is about pro tennis. And she did When Life Gives You Lululemons. And she did last night Chateau Marmont, something like that. I can't remember exactly. But hers are a fun, light romp.
Okay.
And she drops you into a world that, well, for me, she drops me into a world that I know nothing about. And it's super fun. So it's like historical fiction, only contemporary, where you're just in this world that's nothing like yours.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. I really liked it, but that is the only book I've read from her. So I'll have to go.
She's written quite a few.
Yeah.
I've got her pulled up right now on Goodreads and I'm like, whoa, how have I missed this?
Yeah. Hers are fun. They're all contemporary. Well, at least the ones I've read are all contemporary.
That's really awesome.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, really what we do during this podcast when we record is just looking at Goodreads and hitting to read.
I need to step up my Goodreads game.
The first place I can go that has a full library, like list of books that I can read about them and see what the ratings are. And like, oh, look how good this book is. We need to read it. Why haven't I read it?
Anyway, so what were you going to say?
So many books, so little time. I also like multicultural literature. My favorite one in that is Ring of Gold by Victor Villaseñor, and that's a nonfiction. Mm-hmm. And that one I just like because it follows the history of my family's history. And so that one I recommend to people. If you have any interest in the immigration, the American immigration story, it's very good.
Yes, I read that one. Yep, excellent.
Did you get all the way through it?
Yes, I did.
He's very wordy.
Oh, I don't read
but
that
But I
one
enjoyed it. Yeah.
It's That one, I can't say everyone will love because I don't think everyone would. That one's just, he's a good writer, but it's a lot.
It's heavy.
Yes, it can be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be gritty. How's that?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What book had you hooked as a reader? Like what book young. Can you think of that was like, yes, give me more. I love reading.
I didn't read until high school, and one of my aunts gave me a romance novel and was like, here, you'll love it. And I was like, wow, this is fantastic.
So I'm not gonna lie. Like a nitty gritty one with like a half naked man on the cover, that kind of a romance
yes, novel. Like full on romance novel. In fact, I'm pretty sure, let me think of it. It was a darling story. Jude Devereaux, Knight in Shining Armor, where she goes back in time in England and meets this, you know, literally a knight. I mean, it's totally fantasy, girl fantasy, but as a teenage, like I was 16 or 17, I'm like, woo, this is fun. Like it got me into reading. And then, you know, like you were saying about the kids, once you get into reading, then you start reading other genres. And then of course I took off. And my aunt was an English teacher for high school. And she was like, I wish I could give these books to my high school students, because some kids that just haven't connected with reading, they just need something light and frothy and fun. And they are.
And they know. Would love that. But as a teacher, yeah, that's yeah. probably not one to recommend.
Probably not. Yeah.
That's so great. But I love it.
There's my little secret.
I will not discredit those trashy romance novels.
Well, have you guys seen Bridgerton? I watched it and was like, this is a romance novel. I was like three episodes in. I'm like, this is exactly following a romance novel. They finally adapted it to screen.
I have to admit, everyone loves it. It's risque.
I'm so out of get the loop.
Get ready
with it.
For all the trash.
Like the first three episodes are benign, and then it like catches you by surprise. But even those first three episodes, I'm like, the romance novel, I wonder what they're going to do with this. And they are, by the way.
Totally.
It's based off of the series. Uh-huh. That's what I had heard. But I didn't know if I was going to ask that as my next question, because I had heard that, but I was like, I know nothing about this.
But what's funny is we're all captivated by it, but yet people have this weird connotation about romance. I'm like, dude, pick up a romance, then you'll change your mind. They're fun, you know? They're fun.
It's a nice escape, right? And just, it's fun.
So,
we have the bromance.
I was going to say that. The Bromance Book Club.
Have you read that book?
No. Let me write that down.
It's good. It's fun.
Modern story of men who turn to romance novels to help them with their relationships. Like what
brilliant. Because this is in a woman's head, exactly what she wants, right?
I know.
I've told men, just watch a chick flick. Come on. Just like. Yeah. The script is there. Just
it's or watch there. A Hallmark
movie.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Exactly. We are not hard to figure out.
It's not hard to believe. Watch a romance movie. Watch a Hallmark movie and do that.
Yep. Totally.
I love it.
Other book that got me into reading that's a little more on a serious note. So I went from the romance novels and then I picked up Gone with the Wind. And that got me into historical fiction. I really, really enjoyed that. Yeah. And then I was off.
Then you're off.
The same aunt, her favorite book was Gone with the Wind. And so that's why I trusted it. I was like, okay.
Ooh.
So yeah.
That's a good recommendation there. I can go get this book.
That book, I need to read it again. I just think Scarlett is a very interesting character and that she doesn't change.
And I think as we change and evolve, going back and reading some of those books over again every like 10 years,
right?
Even
with different eyes
you're like, oh wait, I have this question now, or I didn't catch that exactly.
Yeah,
love reading.
I do too. So is there an author that you're like, every time they come out with a book, you don't miss it, it's like top of your list? Is that Philippa
Gregory, however you say it? Yeah, I have on my desk right now her new book from the library, The Dark Tides, just came out.
She's Jamie.
I'm very loyal to her.
I'm excited
I'm
for
so
Jamie.
Excited
because she has all these books she can read now.
Like I don't have 345 books. On
I'm like an expert on Henry VIII's wives now because I've read all her books.
I can't wait.
I know, they're so good.
I love the idea.
They even made a series on Starz about her. Like I think they adapted her books to a series.
Really?
They call it The White Queen, and it's about Yep.
That's a good one too. The White Queen book is really good.
Very good.
I read that one.
Yeah, so it's been adopted.
It's such an awful time. Aren't we glad we weren't women then?
Right? I do think.
Come a long way.
Yeah.
I do think if a time machine was made, most women won't get on it.
Yeah.
That is so true. No, thank you.
Seriously? No, I'm good. 2021.
Let's that maybe go funny. Into the future a little.
Yeah, I'll go into the future, see what's there. I'm not leaving this.
I love it.
So what's on your shelf now? What are you reading now?
The new Dark Tides. I've just barely finished the one before called Tide Lens. And then Now I'm ready to start.
So that's your current read.
So do you prefer to listen or you like to read a physical book? What's your go-to form?
I am very old school. I tote around the physical book.
I love it.
No matter if it's vacation or the airport, I am like, I want the book. Feel it and smell it. Yes. And use it as a coaster and, you know, have it. It's like my little, it's my security blanket pacifier. I didn't like proofreading my own ebooks. I have a like mental block on ebooks.
That is so funny.
I know.
You know, for me, it depends on where I'm at.
Yeah.
Like if I have downtime at work, I have an ebook on my laptop, so it maybe looks like I'm working and not just reading.
Right.
I have my tricks here and there. Bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the car, they know you at all.
True. I'm not fooling anyone. when I'm in the car, I'm listening to a book, and when I can have a on an airplane on vacation, I have a book in my hand. So it
like makes
like
me
a physical book on vacation, or you do the ebook sometimes?
Physical. The only time I do an ebook is when I'm at work, in a meeting.
I might turn on an ebook at night when Steve's asleep. And yeah, so I can't have a light on, but I can have my e-reader, you know, and like it's a dim light. And so I can read that way at night in bed.
However, we can sneak a book.
Right? That's the truth.
Yeah, you guys are legit. You are avid readers. I think writing might be in your future because I do think avid readers make amazing
writers.
That takes
time. That means I'd have to stop reading.
True.
Right.
It does take time.
And there's just so many books already out there.
And that's like a tough choice, right? Like, oh, do I just listen to some more of this book, or do I just like maybe stare at a screen for a minute? I don't know.
It's tough, I have to say.
It is. My hat's off. It is. It takes a lot of self-control, right? To say like, I'm working right now and this is what I'm doing.
Yeah. So on that note, I was going to ask you like, what do you schedule your time for writing? Do you write when it hits? Being a mom, how do you do it in your life? How do you structure your writing time?
So definitely being a mom, I structure work time. Writing is tough because you definitely have to have the ideas there and be ready to say something. So I will work on marketing if it's not coming to me. I can with self-publishing, there's so many other jobs to do. There's formatting, there's marketing, there's, you know, your social media, it's endless. So I will set a weekly goal of word count. And that way, if it doesn't happen that day, then I have to do it double the next day. If I leave it all until Sunday, that's not the best because, you know, that's a high word count in one day. So I try to just but I do guard my work time during the day. I think when you have a flexible work from home job, it's easy to fill your time with other things.
Yes.
It's easy to get distracted. It's easy to volunteer. It's easy to, I'm going to go work out. So I actually am very strict about scheduling my workout time and my work time. And then everything stops when the kids get home. That's how I do it. Sometimes I'll come back to it if I'm on a roll. When they're doing homework, I'll kind of work on it, but it's better when it's quiet for me.
Having kids around, it would be so easily distracted.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. COVID was tough.
mom.
With writing, it's like you have this thought bubble above your head of this scene that you're trying to take from this visual, like a movie in your head, and you're trying to describe it in words. And so when a kid comes in with the mom, I want to show you whatever, the thought bubble sometimes just like just disappears. And you're like, where was I going with that? What was I doing with that? And it's just gone. And thought bubble is here. And I really only need about a half hour and then I'm good. So yeah, so no, it does take a lot of self-discipline. It's easy to procrastinate. It's easy to get overwhelmed because it is an 8-month project. I think ironically, the sport taught me that. Gymnastics taught me, just if you show up every day, day in and day out, it seems like you're not getting anywhere. But then you look back at the end of months and months and months, and there really is progress. And so that I was able to take into this project.
And that's with everything in life. Like, we look back, it looks so hard looking forward, but when we look back and see where we were before,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Genius. And on that note, I went back and read all my books last March and fixed any errors, because I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot I wrote that. Like, you grow, you know. So back, that's the other thing about self-publishing. You can update your manuscript at any time.
So when somebody orders on Amazon, does it then just print then, or they have a warehouse of books? Because if you're changing it, that means, am I reading into that?
You're correct. So it depends on if Amazon is your publisher, and so they use KDP, if you're using another self-publishing company. And I started out using another self-publishing company, and they would buy like 10 and leave it in their warehouse. And then people would buy the 10 and then they would just show out of stock. And then I wouldn't sell anymore because people saw that it was out of stock. So then I moved over to Amazon or KDP, and they are print on demand. It's called POD, print on demand. And so it always shows in stock, because when someone orders it, they just press print and send it. They're genius.
That's awesome. So it's never out of stock, because we can always print one out and send it to you. And then you can go in and make those corrections, so you don't have to live with it until the next edition.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And I even made changes to my cover, the back cover. I updated, for now that there's, at the time there were 7 books, and I updated the back cover to have all 7 books. I was able to just upload the new one, and that's it going forward.
So you're up to, cool. You have 7 out now.
I have 8 out now. Back covers show 7,
but you have, okay. I thought I saw 8.
So enough, the moms know that there's just a bunch. Like, that's good.
And are there plans for more? Is this going to continue? Do you know where it ends?
So, I don't know where it ends. It is going to continue. So now I'm at a turning point, or a changing point, if you will, from middle grade. It's middle grade writing, but the age of the characters are 5th grade on this last book. And now that they're moving to 6th grade, I'm going to maybe rebrand it a little bit so that and cover more difficult topics. And when I say rebrand it, so that parents know, I'm going to talk about something harder. Like, the next book I'm writing is about puberty, which is very monumental for gymnasts. Puberty is really hard. Their bodies change, their center of gravity changes. They think they're fat. I mean, it's a disaster. So that's the next book. I don't know how to explain. Kind of like Sweet Valley High, Sweet Valley Twins to Sweet Valley High. I don't remember which was which, but they got older in one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it'll be like that. I'm at a breaking point in both their age, going from elementary school to junior high, and both in their level gymnastically. The sport changes quite a bit in level 6, and that's where they're at. So I'm just going to make it like an older kid series now.
The next level. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So which is a bit of a challenge, because I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to write like a more complicated book.
Right. Yeah.
And approach those hard topics.
Yeah.
So. And those are endless in the sport, unfortunately. So I'll start with puberty.
Well, there you go. Right. Every mom is looking for a book to help with puberty.
Right. Do we have any since Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Are there any new ones?
I've loved the Smart Girl's Guide to, like, the American Girl one.
So I was just going to say
My Body, All of Me and My, what is it?
It's American Girl's Guide to Your... I don't know.
All about Mature, me.
I don't know. Body. All about me. All I think you're me? Right.
Anyway, they have a couple great, that are great.
Yes.
And
but I don't know about a ton.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. And then also, even if there are a ton, reading over and knowing, like, what are we gonna cover
topic.
In this? This is
yeah,
a pretty broad
exactly.
I wanna prepare
and someone who's an athlete, right? Like, you're looking at it from the point of view of someone who is an athlete and trying to grow in their sport.
And body.
Right. So I think it's very unique for gymnasts, dancers, cheer.
For sure.
teenagers, yeah. their body lines are part of the sport. And so they're much more aware of the changes, and they think that they're big, and they're not big. They're just becoming women. And it's like, you guys, like, this is natural. You're healthy, you're beautiful. And I think it's better now. We have much more healthy examples of female athletes that are strong instead of scrawny. And that's what I want to kind of approach, is that thought process. No, you are beautiful and you're supposed to look like this. And yeah.
When you said as their bodies are changing, it throws their balance off. I grew up doing ballet, and yeah. I can tell you there was, if my bun was put in the exact right spot on my head, I could do turns much easier. If it was off centered, if it was a low bun, like, you really learn all those little intricate things that change your balance.
Wow.
And so when you are going through puberty, it throws you for a loop when you've been able to do these things, and now all of a sudden you're not, and you're in a tight leotard all the time.
Right.
Everyone's seeing everything that's happening.
Right.
There are so many, it just adds to your progression and what you're doing and the pressure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And when it's not going well, they're like, why can't I do this? I must be really big. And it's like, you grew 2 inches in a month. Like, of course it's going to be harder. And they're just so hard on themselves. So I just want them to have something to refer to, that they're not alone. And then it's
so
normal.
Important. Like, it's normal. You're normal. This is okay.
Yeah. So to answer your question, yes, a book, it's technically a book one, but it's sort of a book nine, and that it picks off exactly where they left off. In fact, I'm repeating the last scene in the last book as the first scene in the first book, only from the new girl's point of view.
Okay.
But
it is a new series almost in itself.
Yeah.
Same series, but new. I don't know how you wrote that.
I feel like I needed to somehow tell the moms it's not this nice, and because the first eight are very sweet.
Yeah.
It's going to get a little bit
getting more complicated.
We're growing up.
Yeah, they're growing up
with bigger issues, now.
Problems, bigger concerns, bigger. Yeah. So I just, because gymnasts are very smart, they tend to read up. Mm-hmm. And so I want to make sure they're not picking up too old.
Right. With topics.
Yeah. Too old for topics. Yes. Yep. So that's what's like. At some point, I'd love to do women's lit, but I don't know if I can get 2 butts done in 1 year.
Well, we are rooting for you to do that.
Cool.
Keep it up. I think this is amazing. I love hearing your story and seeing your growth through it.
I know.
Bravo.
Thank you.
So cool. Well done.
Yeah, it's taken time. It's like a small business. You know, the first couple of years were a little bit dicey, and then after there was a bit of a backlist, then it supports us. So it's going on. Yeah.
Even better that you can do it and love it, and it's supporting you.
Yeah.
And you've made it work. Way to dig in and
thank you.
Bring it to life.
Grit. So yeah, they're on Amazon, and I didn't get to say this, but they're also on my website, melissatorres.com. And when people order from my website, I'll sign them for the girls.
Nice touch.
Yeah,
it's super cool.
I want them to see that they can write. Like, here's a girl, she writes, you can do it too.
That's awesome.
I love that so much.
Perfect.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. This has been so fun.
I love it. I love picking the brain of a writer. So
absolutely. And just learning the ins and outs, and every experience is different and unique. And I just find it so fascinating. Thank you for sharing yours with us.
You're welcome. I love talking to readers.
Yeah.
I love books as much as I do.
Anytime.
Absolutely.
We'll talk books. I'll just say the word, we're there.
Right.
Yes. Our happy place. Well, thank you for having me.
So thanks so much to Melissa for joining us today. Don't forget to comment and interact with us. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook.
You can email us at thisisyourbookclubpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Always.
Thank you to Amphibious Zoo for our music.
And we'll catch you next time. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Jamie.
And this is your book club.